Blog Talk Radio.
There is no earthly way of knowing.
Good man is on fire.
Which direction we are going?
Narek the El Camino. It would have been DWI.
To Tipping Point. I am Stephen Platinum, and joining me as always, the man with the plan, the venerable Larry Goodman. Larry, how are you? 2016's getting going. How's it been for you so far?
Yes, feeling more venerable than ever. I was going to try to make a triple shot this weekend, but I had to quit at a double. Didn't make number three, but still a big... It was a good wrestling weekend, off to a good start, and there's obviously a lot of big stuff on the calendar here, which we'll talk about a little later, but a lot of stuff coming down the pike in these first few months of the year.
Yeah, you know, it's WrestleMania season. I consider anything around the Royal Rumble until WrestleMania to be WrestleMania season, and often it's been said, as the WWE/F goes, so goes wrestling, and it seems like it's a time where a lot of places are drawing good houses around here. You know, WrestleMerica, you were at that show. They seem like they did incredibly well, amongst other things. And, you know, there's general, the malaise of the WWE. I would not say that it's over per se, but certainly things are looking up and people are excited. Tell us about WrestleMerica, first of all, Larry. How was that? What was that experience like?
A nice old school show. You know, it was uncomplicated in what they presented, nothing too fancy. But it got over like gangbusters with the people there. I think it's very similar to Cedartown when they're running up in those shows at the Perks, because you've got a relatively small town, Barnesville, 6,000 people or something, and you bring people with some recent TV exposure and some star power in, and to a town where there ain't a whole lot happening, and people come out, and they've been coming out, and you know they're doing 400 pretty much every time out, maybe 500 this time, depends who you talk to. I saw some guy put up on PW Insider 700. Well, they didn't make 700, but
yeah,
they might have had five. Either way,
what's more wrestling than bumping up an already inflated number?
this is a fan report bumping it up, so I don't know what the deal was with that. But he had Chris Elner had 700. And then, by the way, they went to Ashburn the next night with definitely a scaled down lineup. And they were pleased. I talked to Marty Miller, and he was pleased with for their first time out there. They did 130 paid, and they're going to come back there again in March.
So it'll be interesting to see. With obviously all the stuff flying around about Luke Gallows and AJ Styles, etc., going to the WWE. Or NXT or some combination of the two, what happens with that promotion? Now, Marty Miller, what was your impression? And I don't know if that's something that we're supposed to talk about, but that's what we do all the time. What's your impression as far as Marty Miller is really the driving force behind this, that thing at this point, isn't he?
Well, I mean, certainly he was, seemed to be running the show, the promotional aspect and keeping an eye on everything that was happening, and he would be consulting with Gallows. But of course, Gallows is in the back, and so Marty Miller is the guy out front, handling things. And I don't see any reason why they wouldn't, keep going. I mean, we'll see what happens with Gallows not present, but I, you know, doesn't seem they've got a formula. There's no reason for that formula not to keep working. That I can see. One thing I wanted to mention about the show, of course, was the switch, which did disappoint some hardcore fans. The switch away from Rave versus Styles as a singles match, which was really nothing. I mean, they did a little bit of grappling, but nothing much at all before it morphed into a tag match. And the fact that the idea there was to preserve Styles for. Well, of course, he doesn't want to get injured before he signs with WWE, and he's got to hit a huge, you know, has a huge tour this week in England, and then ironically, he winds up getting hurt in the match. You know, a complete accident when Gallows dropped Sal on him. He was in a crossface, and he landed on his neck, and I guess he had some momentary numbness there from his neck to his shoulder. Not good, but I mean, he was okay, but just one of those unfortunate things.
That's been, I don't know if it's safe to say it's a trend, but I've noticed a few spots like that where somebody's caught in a submission of some kind and then somebody drops on top of the two of them. I remember seeing the Usos splash on top of a couple guys, and I thought that they snapped the guy's arm damn near clean off. It was one of those where it's like, why is that? That's not a spot people should be doing.
He AJ was not ready for any kind of impact, and here's this guy landing on him. You know, so I get what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, and so and tell us about the other show that you went to, please.
Oh, Why We Wrestle.
I gotta say, I mean, I gotta give props to Todd. You know, when I saw that they were doing this tournament that's gonna go on till oh my god, end of March, and I mean, I'm gonna sound like I'm being a jerk because I'm a jerk, but and then they're they're gonna do a tag tournament right after. I have to say that my immediate thought was, oh my god, where's the heat? It's just gonna be like match after match after match. But I gotta say, Todd really pulled through, and it sounds like they just had like a really great debut show.
They really did, and the you hit on something very important there that I had the same question. And yeah, the tournament's important, and the tournament's going to have the best wrestling, but the stories are much broader and much more fleshed out than just the tournament, and involve a lot of the familiar characters to Anarchy fans. And much more, as I wrote in the report, much more in line with the Wildside/Anarchy product than I thought it might be. Not much of a change
at all,
really.
I thought you brought up an interesting point where Charles, he was aberration's not the right word, but you know, the marriage didn't work. I thought that analogy was really great. That sometimes it's somebody's fault. It's just sometimes marriages don't work, in spite of everybody wanting them to. But this seems like it's a pretty good fit so far.
Yeah, you know what really drove that point home to me of that this is more like, for lack of a better way, it's within the Anarchy or the Cornelia Wrestling family was the emotion of the send-off to Shadow Jackson.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
For those who didn't read the report, I mean, so Shadow Jackson, it seemed like it wasn't necessarily a thing that was thought of a long time ago, but he basically did a Loser Leaves Town against Kevin Blue, correct? Which was put in the sort of main event spot, and man, I can't imagine. I mean, I'm sure Shadow's promo was unbelievable. Genuine tears. Just a guy who I just can't say enough about that guy. I mean, it's why I always felt so strongly about that male performer of the year category, because to me, that was kind of the like Shadow Jackson had won, more than one year in a row. And absolutely deserved it. I mean, he's a guy that just performs at a different kind of, like, he's a guy who just gets it. And a guy like that that's been around, been face, been heel, but it's just one of those where he could do anything as far as from a performance level. and getting the crowd to go where he wanted them to go. I mean, what was that? I mean, Larry, tell us about the speech and just the overall effect. And you're somebody who's seen him probably damn near that entire 14 years there.
Well, I have seen him the entire 14 years, and I've seen a bunch of emotional goodbyes in that building. And this one was really moving and really from the heart and totally spontaneous. There was no promo. He just started talking and weeping and trying to talk between the tears. And it was incredibly moving. And my understanding is that they only had maybe 3 days notice that this was going to be it for him. And a lot of guys coming to the building didn't know at all that this was going to be it for him. So very, very powerful moment. And him circling the ring, shaking hands with each and every fan, with his six-year-old son with him, as he went around the ring, it was really something, really something.
I mean, it's telling that I think this sort of alludes to, it really is about the core of that place is the strength of the Wildside Anarchy roster. Now, while the guys who couldn't be there were all Wildside Anarchy guys at one point or another, meaning like Masada and Jimmy Rave, who had done on a couple other shows that night, and Ace, but really, the impression I got was whoever the owner is, we can't say, is kind of counting on the sort of like star power and like matchups to draw people. And they weren't there. So it wasn't that at all. It really is about harnessing the power that already exists in that place through a history and a connection that you can't manufacture. I was talking to somebody about this recently, that a lot of places in Georgia, I feel, are trying to jumpstart and create a sort of feeling and a history that you can't just create. It has to sort of grow organically. And they want it all now, 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 now. Look, we have history. Look, we have this great relationship with these fans. That's so intense. And it's like that is something that you develop over time. It's relational. And I think why we wrestle indirectly, I think, had to book how they should have booked, which is let's start telling some stories. Let's send Shadow off right. Like, instead, all the other stuff kind of got put to the wayside because of the people that couldn't be there, and it just boiled down to really great stories that were already, the fans already had a connection to, and you're capitalizing on it instead of trying to create some sort of, I mean, I'll just say it, this sort of beyond wrestling feel. That's just not that building, in my opinion.
No, they're not. They're clearly not going down that road. I mean, they have Bill Barons come back and make also a really nice speech. And I mean, what a great touch that was. He pulls out of the bag a brand new shiny NWA Wildside belt that nobody has ever worn. That he's had for 10 years, and now it's going to be the Why We Wrestle belt. I thought that was very cool.
Very cool.
And very cool that top heel guy, he gets punched by Kevin Blue, and they make an angle out of it. And then also that Blue goes over, Shadow puts Blue over in the main event. I mean, so there's a top heel in the making there in Kevin Blue.
Yeah. How's Bill not gonna get popped by me? Bastard. What's that about? I was a little jealous reading that. I'm like, what? Damn it. It just goes to show the power of the Georgia Wrestling History Year-End Awards. So Kevin Blue took it, and so you're getting, here's the push, kid. You got a rocket on you now. Well, the show that you were going to try to make but didn't was AWE's show, I assume, on Sunday in in another venue near their other venue on Spring Street. They ended up not doing the other venue and kind of being closer to what I guess they would consider home. What did you hear about that show?
Well, I read the report on the show, and we'll talk about the video that Josh Wheeler posted later on. But the thing that got me was if this is a true number, that they did 150, which is more than they ever put in the other place, and they did it with a spur-of-the-moment change of venue. So if that's a real number, that's a real positive sign for them.
Yes. I like that we have to say if it's a real number.
Yeah, I mean...
Wrestling.
and it wasn't their number. The report was on another website. I don't know who wrote the report. Where they got their information from, but it wasn't that number didn't come from Josh.
Wow, I mean that's stunning. In that show of the year too, which they threw all their promotional weight behind for a long time, drew about 100. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
well, cool. Well, we're definitely going to talk about that Josh Wheeler video later on, but we have a guest this evening, Larry.
Yes, continuing on with our award winners, one that we did not have on the show last week, and I take responsibility for that. I was remiss and did fail to invite her, and she was willing and available to come on this week. Georgia's female performer of the year is joining us now, Dementia DeRose. Welcome to the Tipping Point.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Dementia, okay, I'll just ask a big question right off the bat. You had undeniably a breakout year. I think I said it on the award show. You could have been up for most improved. You could have been up for any number of things. This was clearly your year, and you took female performer of the year. I don't think anybody would really dispute that. What happened this year that just made you just really went for it? You wrestled for a number of promotions. You stole the show at a number of different shows. What's gotten into you? What do you attribute this to?
Well, I can say honestly, my breaking moment was when I had my match against Mickey Knuckles at AWE this past year. And even though people they congratulated me, they told me how great the match was, I felt that being in the ring with her, like I was nowhere near where I should have been. And after that match, I knew that I had to amp up everything. I mean, not just my gimmick, not just who I am, not just my wrestling, not just my craziness, everything. From the moment I step into that ring, from the moment I come out, I wanted fans to know who I was, what I was about. And if I step in the ring, whether it's a male or a female, it's going to be a hell of a match, regardless whether I lose or win. And like after facing Mickey Knuckles, that match really opened my eyes.
Well,
that is so great. I mean, in this day and age, and especially that's a match that did get praise. Like you said, I'm sure any number of people came up to you. I remember Larry's report certainly about that show. But yet what you took away from it is, something I wish more wrestlers would learn from, which is, when you're in the ring with somebody who is as seasoned as Mickey Knuckles, you should have the ability to be honest with yourself. Even if you pulled off a great match, of just saying, yeah, but where am I? Like, what can I do? And like you said, you just turned everything up. I remember talking to Jay, who certainly had the biggest hand, I think, Dementia, in training you, Jay Fury. Yeah. And one of my favorite things that Jay ever talked about was – how, you know, his career was going really well. You know, he was doing FIP. He was getting Ring of Honor shots. He did Combat Zone, and he impressed them. But he got in the ring with Jamie Noble, and he just went, I felt like I knew nothing. You know, like Jamie Noble, he's like, he was so fast, so smooth, so clean, and yet made the most out of everything he did on a level that he's like, I couldn't even, I just knew I had to, it sort of shook him out of his complacency. And it sounds like that's what happened with Dementia. Though, I mean, even up to the point where you were wrestling Mickey Knuckles, I don't think anybody thought, oh, there's Mickey Knuckles way up here, here's Dementia way down here. But in your own mind, you learned, you know what, I got to step it up. And you absolutely did. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not like, you know, whether the fans, you know, cheered me or booed me, I knew I had to step my game up because, I mean, you know, everybody loves crazy. Everybody loves bloodshed, whether they want to admit it or not. Everybody loves it when two people are in the ring and they're beating the crap out of each other. And I honestly feel to make that even better is to show that you have nothing to lose and go all out with it. Like, it's like you have to basically, me, what I'm trying to do, I want to instill fear in everybody, in everybody's hearts. I want them to be like, oh, wow, this woman here, she will go to the limit of hurting herself to hurt her opponent. And I honestly feel that Mickey Knuckles match really opened it up for me. I feel that a lot of people saw that I can step toe-to-toe with the craziest, and Mickey Knuckles, she really is one of the craziest.
You also, this year, Aisha, got in the ring with a lot of men. What are your thoughts on wrestling men versus wrestling women?
Oh, what are my thoughts? To be honest, wrestling men, I really have no differences. I mean, I see my opponent, okay, whether you're a male or female, I'm going to try my hardest to hurt you. And whether I have to either, you know, bite you or claw your eyes out or break your nose or make you bleed in any way, it doesn't matter to me that you're a female because you're getting in this ring right along with me. And if you're a male, then you know, hey, this girl here, she's going to do everything in her power to get me down. So I'm not going to go easy on her just because she is a female. So I really don't see a difference whether you're male or female. I do know, I will say this, whenever I get in the ring with a male wrestler, I do have to go, what's a good term? I have to go extra hard because I feel that, you know, a male wrestler, I wouldn't say he's stronger than me. I wouldn't even go so far as to say that. Maybe he's more, what's the term I'm trying to find? More, he has the ability, I'd say the ability to at some point possibly hold me down more than a female wrestler. So
right,
I have to give him extra. I have to give him more. I got to find a way to not just beat him down, but outsmart him, if that even makes sense.
You know, there are women who wrestle men. I mean, it's just a fact. There are less female wrestlers, especially female wrestlers that I would consider on a great or elite level in the state of Georgia. So those women end up wrestling men a lot. I think the thing that separates Dementia from other women who have wrestled men, would be that Pandora, Rachel, or whoever else, I think Dementia, there's a credibility when Dementia wrestles men that others simply don't have. You know, I think, put it this way, Dementia can wrestle as a heel against a male babyface, and nobody has a problem with it. Nobody goes, oh, but, you know, if you're a woman wrestling a man, the woman should always be the baby face because the man is more physically threatening. I don't think anybody for a second goes, Dementia, there's no way that that she would terrify me next to, say, Johnny Danger. I think people are very willing and open to accept Dementia as a heel against a male face opponent, and nobody questions it. And I think that's a testament to the credibility that you've developed. Obviously you've done a number of shows with Bill Butcher, that you guys have gone around together in different promotions. What's that relationship with Bill? I don't mean like from boyfriend girlfriend perspective, but I mean what's he kind of bring to the table? What do you bring to the table?
Well, I would say this. It's like the old time crazy like Stranger, you know. And every now and then you just have to let the beast out. And like this past Saturday at the last PCW show, I wasn't there when he went against Brian and Blaze, but you know, I've heard it was a great match. But every now and then you just have to find yourself with people who are as crazy as you or who think like you, and every now and then you just have to let the beast out. And being with Bill the Butcher, you know, I'm not going to say I tame him. I won't even say that because I hate that. But it's just the fact that we make a hellacious tag team. And honestly, I feel with him by my side, I'm not saying I really need him, and I'm not saying that he needs me, but we can do some damage as a team.
Dementia, I'm curious to know about your transformation. And for those who aren't familiar with your career, you for a long time were known as Aisha Sunshine in PCW. Walk us through this, the transformation from Aisha Sunshine to Dementia DeRose, because Dementia DeRose was a complete revelation to me.
It was a complete opposite. My time as Aisha Sunshine, she was just a little happy-go-lucky cunt. I couldn't stand her. But Dementia DeRose, I would say Dementia DeRose was always there. I call her my she-hulk. And she was always there. She was just brewing. She was waiting for that right time and that right moment. And me as Aisha Sunshine, you know, I tried my best. You know, at that time, I would call Aisha Sunshine a completely different person, because at that time, she just wanted to make the fans happy. She wanted to be the it girl. She wanted to be friends with everybody. But on the inside, like, Dementia was just hating it. She was just loathing Aisha Sunshine. She wanted out. During Aisha Sunshine's time at PCW, I guess it got too much for Dementia, and she broke out and never looked back since. And I would say this because I honestly believe that deep down, everybody loves Crazy. Everybody wants to cheer. As much as they hate me, I believe deep down that they want to cheer the fact that I'm this crazy psycho female that carries a knife named Lorena Bobby, and will cut you down would do basically everything to hurt you. And people, as much as they don't want to admit it, they like that. They because we're all beasts inside, and they want to cheer or boo for that. But they're glad that that's in the ring, because it's basically, I honestly feel, it's expressing a lot of what they're feeling inside. Not I wouldn't even say not all the way, but at some point, some people they're feeling that, hey, I like what she's doing. She's crazy. She doesn't care what people think about her, and she will get in the ring with any guy or girl.
You talk about dementia as if it's another, you know, like a personality separate from
oh,
you.
Oh, yes, completely different. Yes, yes. Yeah, definitely. Dementia, like Aisha Sunshine's never coming back.
How nice it is for someone to invest. I was talking to somebody else about the guys that are really investing. Like, I think Leo Rush is one of these guys that completely invests in himself.
Yeah.
I think he's on a different level as far as, you know, the symptoms are stuff like his merchandise and all that. I think, but that's just symptomatic of who he is. I think he is sort of willing himself to stardom, and he hasn't been in wrestling very long at all, and he got started very young. But he's just one of these guys that completely invests in who he is, who's taken advice, because he was he used to wrestle under his real name, which wasn't a good name at all. I think it's Green is his last name, so that's what he was using. And someone at Ring of Honor said, "Dude, you want your Green to be your last name?" Like, basically implying that you don't know what you're doing. Like, that's terrible. And, you know, Leo Rush, and he puts in the gym time, and he's got a look. And is he short? Absolutely. But you can't do anything about being short, but he can make it up in a million different ways. And I see dementia like that, where it's somebody who, my God, if you don't believe in what you're doing, how the fuck is anybody else supposed to? And I think that's the big transition. I think Aisha Sunshine, on some level, was kind of a creation of other people. There is definitely aspects of you there. But dementia is something that you can just tell you're all in on doing. And there's something about that's, it's mesmerizing. It's worth investing in. The gimmick is so strong that you want to think of ways to use it. Who else was going to wrestle Mickey Knuckles? Really? I mean, it's just like Pandora's wrestled her, and, you know, she's definitely – Pandora's another one who, whether people love her or hate her, she's completely invested in being Pandora. I don't think there's any doubt about that, you know? And I think dementia equally is, like, completely invested in what you're doing. And it's, dare I say, fun. It's fun to be part of whatever it is that you're doing. That's phenomenal. What's here's a cheesy question. What's a goal for 2016?
2016, I want to travel internationally. I want to go over to Mexico. I've Canada. So that's definitely my main thing, is to expand more. I feel like I missed a huge opportunity this past year, and I can't let that happen again. So I'm doing everything in my power to make sure that happens.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to sound really harsh, because it is. There's very few wrestlers in Georgia in particular who really have something completely special about them. And I think Dementia's one of those people that just has something special that can translate somewhere else. That she doesn't, I mean, obviously when you're booked better in a place, that's better, but you don't need booking. Like I said, you walked in on Roar. I mean, I didn't know what the fuck Roar was when you did that match against Mickey Knuckles. And I mean, in front of a crowd that, let's be honest, was there to see Monstrosity or just to shit on what was going on. I mean, Larry, you can back me up on that. I mean, it just seemed like that crowd was completely just like whatever, but yet you and Mickey Knuckles go out there, no story. They probably don't even know who the hell you guys are, and you completely captured them and won them over completely in the course of one match.
Yes, that is no exaggeration, because there were, to say the least, people, casual people and people that were sort of ha-haing about wrestling, and you guys gave them a wake-up call.
Yeah, with the reality of that. You saw us headbutt each other fucking 20 times on the ropes.
Shit. It's interesting you brought up international and specifically Mexico dementia, because I could see you making it big in Mexico.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I know Aja wrestled there, Nina wrestled there, and, you know, Pandora's wrestled there in the past, but I got a feeling they would go gaga for dementia. I mean, I just feel it.
Yeah, that would be something I would love to cross off my bucket list. That would be amazing. You know, and people have asked me, I mean, not even asked me, I've had people message me, they're like, you know, if you're a very pretty person, if you would just pretty yourself up more, I'm pretty sure you get more bookings. And that's like something I hate so much, because I feel that, you know, women's wrestling, we all know how women's wrestling is. It already has kind of a crappy rep for just being pretty girls walking around, and their matches are the drizzling shit. But it's like, you know, I have something like it's for example, my finishing move, the Damnesia. You know, for the longest before it became my finisher, I was very insecure about my butt because fans would always yeah. talk about it, and they would just focus on my butt throughout my match. And I remember talking to a specific wrestler, and he told me, he said, you know, if you really want them to shut up about it, make it your finisher. And I'm like, how? I mean, what? You know, won't they talk about it even more? I give them something to talk about. If they want to talk about your ass, then let them say how vicious your ass is. I mean, let them
right.
see how powerful it is. You know, knock somebody out with it. Like, that you got a big butt, you might as well use it. So.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, we'll let you go in just a bit, but you know, when you mention, usually when men mention a foreign country they want to wrestle, it's always Japan. And you didn't say Japan, but what's interesting about that is I think you fall right in line with the very traditional way Japanese women are booked, which is you have these sort of like Barbie doll baby faces, and then you have these big scary fucking broads who kill them. You know, whether it's, you know, it's like Monster Ripper, or, you know, who became Bertha Faye, or, you know, Mother-in-Law, which is still my all-time favorite gimmick ever. You know, just these women who can provide a base for the baby faces who just project fear, who just are scary and brutal, and they want to see them do their thing in Japan. I can really imagine you kind of doing your thing there. And so, I mean, and how many, Larry, let's be honest, how many people, men or women in the state, do you think have a legitimate shot of doing this thing for real money? It's not a lot. And Dementia, I would say, is on that list.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
I will second that.
Thank you.
Well, Dementia, where are you going to be? Where are you going to be this weekend, and maybe the weekend after?
Oh well, this weekend I'm going to be at PCW Platinum Championship Wrestling mm-hmm. in Cordell, 2001 Main Street. I'm really looking forward to February because that's when I'm going to Westlake, Michigan, and Sacramento, California. So I'm definitely excited about that.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's fantastic.
Dementia, who are you wrestling for in California?
Oh, right now, I have no idea, but definitely, I'm definitely, I got my plane ticket. So it's I know I may be either in a tag match or something. But as of right now, I don't know my.
What's the promotion?
Big Time Wrestling. It's an all
yeah.
promotion. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yes,
well,
I'm definitely excited about that.
Well, congratulations. I mean, sorry you weren't on last week, but I think that worked out for the best, actually. Really got a chance to talk to you and people to get to know you who didn't know about you already. Well, now you know. And obviously bigger and better things are happening in 2016. Thank you so much for being on this. And I got to say, you know, I listened to an interview that you did like 2 years ago, and boy, you sucked, but I'm that guy, Larry. I'm that guy.
Nice,
but
nice.
No, she fucking sucked. I think I even told her. I think I even like called
yeah.
her up, and I was like, that was fucking terrible.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, I mean, you can see you've grown as a person, as a woman, as a wrestler, and I mean, like, fuck. Nothing is more interesting and compelling in the wrestling business or performance in general than confidence. And clearly you've got it coming off of you. You're Woman of the Year in the state of Georgia for 2015, and it was very much deserved.
Thank you. I try. You know, it's not easy, so I try hella hard.
Cool. Well, take care, and I'm sure I'll see you. Hell, I might see you Saturday. I'll have to see if I skip into town. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I mean, she was terrible years ago. And like I said, just to see somebody grow. That's why I keep telling you, Larry, we got to have Cameron Cade on again. It wasn't me and you who interviewed him that other time, but I have a feeling, I think as people get more confident, as people sort of figure out who they are as people and performers, that just translates, you know, translates.
I think that's a great idea. We both love redemption stories. Let's have Cameron Cade back on, one of the worst interviews ever on Georgia Wrestling Now, and we can, you know, take another shot with Cameron. I think that's a great idea. But, I mean, I thought you hit on some great points in that interview, but, one thing with her, uniqueness of her character and presentation will carry her a long way, I think. There's nothing like Dementia DeRose. She's hit on something.
You know, filling a spot or being somewhere where other people aren't is a part of the wrestling business that I think a lot of the guys lose. When it seems like a lot of the guys, and this isn't everybody certainly, but a lot of the guys are trying to be like somebody else who already has the gig that they're trying to get. And I remember, you know, Xavier Woods, a story that he told was how resistant he was to being doing the Creed gimmick. And guys his trainer told him again and again, it's like, dude, like, just do this Creed thing. And he's like, I know you think you have in your head that you're doing this great thing. He's like, you're just another guy. You're not standing out. You're not showing a personality, you know. Work a gimmick. Show that you can work this gimmick to the utmost, and someday you'll get a chance to do your own thing, but you don't even know what that is yet. You're a young man. You don't have any life experience. That's what gimmicks are for, which I'm not sure I 100% agree with, but I do like the idea that that's part of the reason that you work a gimmick, is because you yourself, you know, they're like, oh, the best gimmicks are you turned up. Right. Well, what if you ain't shit yet? Well, what's, you know, 100 times 0 is 0. And if you don't really have something that people can latch onto, a uniqueness that really can be exploited and used, then turning that up, who fucking cares? But if you can work a gimmick as a performer and then slip aspects of yourself into that gimmick until you kind of fill that gimmick up and you don't need it anymore, which is what I always think happens in the WWE. Guys work gimmicks and then they start filling themselves into that gimmick until they shed the gimmick. John Cena is going to be a rapper guy until he doesn't need it anymore. Triple H is going to be, how many fucking things did Triple H do until he really, there's almost no line. I think most people would say Paul Levesque and Triple H are not completely different guys at this stage in the game. You know, I think a lot of people meeting him, even if he was in a suit, would sort of approach him as if he was Triple H, because I think that those lines have been blurred. That's what you're going for. And, you know, Dementia clearly has caught on to something. I think there's a few other people that have done that as well. I think, you know, Jimmy Rave has reached the point where he's comfortable being him. And I think it comes through in his performance, whether he's wrestling a great, like, 5-star type of work rate match, or he's doing like a Larry Zbyszko bit where he's leaving the ring a bunch of times. I think there's such a confidence in his performance at this stage that, you know, he's put in who he is, a guy who's overcome a lot of stuff without having to be overt about it. There's just a level of confidence and maturity about him that just translates no matter what, even when he's being silly with Sal, I think there's a legitimacy to it all that, you know, he like, that's when his genuine love of wrestling and the fun part comes through, because that's what he really feels. And that's something for a lot of young guys to learn. You know what? No offense. Who the fuck are you? like, you don't have a life that I want. You're just figuring out, you know, you're just figuring out how to get your clothes on in the morning. Don't pretend that you're worth me paying money to come watch yet. You're not. I don't care how much flippity-do bullshit you do. I'm investing in you. And if that means you work again, like Ashton Starr, I think, is a guy who, he's a young guy who's figured out, I'm going to work this gimmick until there's something about me. Like, Jeff G. Bailey is a guy that at this stage in the game, you know, you feel like you're seeing the real guy, whether that's true or not, just because he's so confident in what he's doing. And he can say anything and people will go along with him because he just carries that weight in a way that I always got pissed when it's like some 20-year-old somebody's manager. I don't care how good you are on the mic. I don't buy it because I go, a manager is supposed to be somebody who is managing somebody, who's offering something up advice-wise. What does a fucking 20-year-old know about life? I can't get a 20-year-old to get my order right at McDonald's. They're not going to tell me.
Unless it's a buffoon manager. I mean, they don't have. There's no gravitas for a 20-year-old to be at ringside managing somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're supposed to be in the ring, I mean, going for it with that sort of youthful exuberance and eagerness. You know, back in the day, traditionally in wrestling, if you were a very young guy, you worked babyface. Like, because the theory was, you got to have some world weariness and some edge on you to be a heel. And heels were the ones who traditionally called out the matches. So it's like, who the fuck are you? You don't know anything. You have to learn how to get over before you can learn how to get somebody else over. And I think there was a very sound theory behind that. You know, the heel's job is to get the baby face over. And frankly, what do you know about getting over? You couldn't even get yourself over. Right. So it's like, you got to work baby. And a lot of people don't like that. And, you know, part of working baby is you get your ass whipped, folks. That's like, that's the gig, is you got to learn how to get sympathy. The only way that, the only currency you have is to take an ass whipping when you're new. And I hope those things don't get lost in wrestling. Dementia certainly has paid her dues, you know, and she's somebody who's, I think, poised to do bigger things. So, Larry, what are we going to talk about next?
Well, how about if we just touch on some upcoming events? Then I want to get around to the Wheeler interview, but we got some.
Please do.
We got some things happening here. One, of course, Ring of Honor is coming in to the Infinite Energy Forum, at Gwinnett Center, on January 23rd, and I see the Young Bucks are on the poster. Roderick Strong, Jay Lethal. That's going to be good. What interests me is Mucha Lucha Atlanta on March 13th, bringing in some Lucha Underground guys. Pentagon, Drago, Phoenix. That's going to get me out there for one of their shows to see those Lucha Underground guys, I think.
And, I mean, Mucha Lucha has been doing incredibly well. So it'll be interesting to see if they can capitalize on bringing those guys from Lucha Underground in and do even better. That's really exciting to hear about. I mean, again, you know, I've said it. I think Charles has said it. Other people have said it. All these people who keep pronouncing wrestling dead or saying it's sick, I don't think they're looking around, because there's any number of promotions that are doing not just good numbers, but I think there's sort of the feeling of there's a lot of places for people to work. I saw a post on Facebook where Fat Corey went, you know, are there any shows on Friday? And the answer was, yeah. Like, you know, there's Pro South, there's AWN. Like, there's always something going on. And there's always a show that's been around for a while. AWN's been running over to 10 damn years. Like, they're out there. And a lot of places are doing really well. And, you know, there's a lot of new blood. I mean, Peach State being the top promotion and WrestleMerica sort of getting in there. I mean, there's a lot of exciting stuff happening.
Nice segue regarding the Friday night show. Friday night, February 5th, Georgia Premier Wrestling has possibly the final independent appearance by AJ Styles versus Corey Hollis.
Versus Corey Hollis, another freaking young guy who you just know is going to reach that next step and probably being Ring of Honor. I mean, how great is that? That's a Friday night. You know, get off of work, go down. I have a feeling that show's going to do really well, just knowing some of the people who are involved with sort of promoting that thing and pushing it from the behind the curtain. I'm really excited about seeing what that show does. Let's see, what shows are you going to get to, Larry? God, you have a ton to choose from.
Well, I think I don't go to many Friday nights, but I think I'm going to check that one out.
Yeah,
another interesting thing that's come up is Southern Fried going to try to run a new town. Going to try to run Lawrenceville on the 27th of February. We'll see how that goes at a rock club, no less.
They're saying that the ticket sales are going really well so far. We shall see. I got to say, you know, I went to the Southern Fried show, the last one, and I was impressed. I mean, it's a great venue. They obviously have a very loyal base, and I think that they've – if the ship was rocky at one point at Southern Fried, I think they've righted the ship. I think they figured out what works there, and now it's just, you know, they've put the pieces back together. I think running once a month in Monroe is smart. I think they have a very strong base, and now they can kind of – now that they've righted the ship, they can venture out to Lawrenceville and try it out. They can try these things. If they work, great. If they don't, oh well – but they've righted the ship at Monroe, which is really what they needed to do. And they've figured out, like, what kind of show they should be. Again, another show that at one point seemed, like, caught up in work rate, and we're going to be this – folks, you got to know who you are and book accordingly. And I think Southern Fried has done that, definitely.
Before we run out of time, we should probably touch a little bit on this – the video that Josh Wheeler posted on Facebook after their show on Sunday night. And for those who haven't seen it, it is up on gwhnewsandnotes.blogspot.com. We've got it up there to take a look if you want. But in essence, Josh says that he received an offer to buy him out on AWE, which he declined, and portrayed it as, you know, a version of a hostile takeover, in the sense that the person that wants to buy it is not somebody that he would want to sell to, and the front person who's actually making the offer is not the actual buyer.
Right.
So he has turned this down because he does not want the artistic vision compromised, essentially. And I guess I have a question for you, Steve. If you got an offer for Platinum Championship Wrestling that would, you know, have you walking out the door with a profit, a nice profit, when you, not to say that you're in debt, but, you know, AWE is, and you could walk, turn around into a profit, what would you do?
Well, I'll put it like this. The other thing that Josh Wheeler said I thought that was notable was, I'll never sell. I'll never blah, blah, blah. It's the wrestling business, and I hate when people call it the business. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. But I'll just say, I mean, because it's apropos. The wrestling business, it's one of these things where at some point you're the mark, or you work marks. It's sort of an ugly fundamental truth about the business. I don't care how nice guys are. Like, I think Charles Anschutz, for example, is a genuinely nice human being. I would never say anything bad about Charles Anschutz, the man. But and I think as everybody's in the game a little longer, you learn you either work people to an extent. That doesn't mean you lie, but it means, what's the point of this shit? I guess is what it's getting down to. And it's, you have to approach it on some level as a business. My primary job with PCW, and again, people can disagree with how I do things and complain. My job is to make it so PCW can continue to run in good conscience, period, point blank. Anybody who's dealt with me knows, you know, the first time Jimmy Ox I had to rent something from Jimmy Ox. He still tells that story. And I walked right up to him when I saw him, and I put the money in his hand. And he's like, oh, you can wait till after the show. And I just went, I don't do things that way. And I can't, because that's what people see wrestling as. Oh, there's a guy watching the door hoping he makes enough money. And if he doesn't, he's going to bolt out the back fucking door. And I knew that that was wrestling's reputation, and it was well earned. The fact that, so to answer your question, what would I do if I was in as much debt as Josh Wheeler was, to not take money? And I'm just going to go under the premise that this thing is real. I'm not going to talk about it if it is some kind of strange, elaborate work in order to enhance his reputation. Because if that's the case, that's just stupid on so many levels. So I'm not even going to like entertain that notion for discussion. If you're in that much debt and you're offered enough money to pay off that debt and then some, then it is irresponsible to not take that money. It's an abomination. And if I was whoever he owed money to, and I knew, wait, you had a chance to get bought out. And it's not that as if he couldn't run a wrestling show. He just couldn't run one near where it currently is. And AWE doesn't exist. It's a phantom. They don't own any real property. All they are is an LLC, right? So, in essence, I think Josh has worked himself. I think he's become the mark for himself. He's attached an emotional investment to it by tying it in with his father. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying I think people forget what the whole point of this shit is. If you're doing it just for fun, to an extent, like Charles is, that's a different thing. If somebody offered me a significant amount of money for Platinum Championship Wrestling, would I take it? Yes. Would I stop running wrestling shows? Nope.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know? And it's like, well, you know, well, what if that was part of the – like, that's what negotiations are for. You get what you can live with and what you're happy with as part of the negotiation. From what I understand, the nature of this thing, I mean, to declare I'll never sell AWE is like me saying I will never accept being King of England if they offer it. Because this sounds like it's the kind of thing, it's like a one in a million, it's just a weird set of circumstances that they even offered AWE this much money. He'll never get this offer again from anybody else, certainly. So I got to say, not taking it is irresponsible. If I got a proportional offer to PCW, like whatever the number that was offered to AWE that I've heard about is so far out of proportion to what that thing could possibly be worth of what anybody has paid for Anarchy, for example. It's over double that. Let's just put it that way. And if somebody had offered me what I thought PCW was worth, and well over that, I would be irresponsible to not take it.
And it wouldn't matter to you who the buyer was or what they intended to do with it once they bought it?
No. Because it's theirs to buy. I think, again, that's a Mark thing. I got to say this about Franklin, and it might upset him, but when Franklin got his knickers in a twist about Charles, I remember thinking to myself, fucker, you sold it to him. Once you sell it to him, it's theirs. And at that point, I mean, again, it's part of separating the emotion from the business. You just... that's what you do. Put it this way. Does Josh feel about AWE or any person feel about wrestling, their wrestling company, any stronger than the fucking Henson family feels about puppetry? No. Let me just say that. No. Jim and Jane Henson had five kids, and four of them are involved in puppetry, and they're all in charge of this foundation, and they all write puppet shows, and they're puppeteers, and my wife just did Jane Henson's nativity show at a church, right? Like, but did the Hensons sell to Disney? You goddamn right. Did when HBO came and said, we'll help fund Sesame Street to save it because it was dying on PBS. Did they make that happen? Yes, Sesame Street's going to be on HBO/Nickelodeon in this week. To not take that and give it a chance to grow is irresponsible. If somebody came to me and said, I'll give you whatever for PCW, right? I'll give you $250,000 for Platinum Championship Wrestling, but I get the name, I get to decide what happens, blah, 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 blah. You know what I would do? Same fucking thing Stu Hart did when Stampede. Is someone going to tell me Stu Hart did not love Stampede Wrestling as much or more than any of these guys in their wrestling companies? Dude, that's his life, right? But did he sell? You're damn right. But what did he make sure? He took care of members of his family. He took care of the boys up top, made sure they all got deals with WWF. And he had things written in there that, you know what, if Vince McMahon doesn't do what he promised, I'm just going to start running again and they're not going to stop me. And that's exactly what happened. To do it, I mean, that's a perfect analogy to me, is it not? You know, it's just a matter of reading the tea leaves and doing what's best, not just for yourself. I mean, I guess I sound selfish. Why? That's not selfish. It's just responsible. I love PCW and our fans so much that if somebody was going to put themselves in the financial spot where they're going to try to expand it, I'm all for it. You know, as long as the boys still had – now, if somebody said, here's X amount of money and you can never run a wrestling show again and PCW will just be gone, that's a different thing. That's something I would work out in a negotiation. I wouldn't just take any deal regardless. Don't get me wrong, but again, I feel like who buys it? Who cares? I mean, to an extent of – like Anarchy, for example. Let's say Clint Eller – and David Garrison tried to buy that thing, did he not? And as long as you get the concessions that you want as the seller while it's still yours, awesome. But if you feel like it shouldn't be sold, terrible. But I don't know. I think Wheeler's going to be kicking himself in the ass. Unless AWE becomes financially viable, which is there's no indication that that's happened yet, and there's no indication that that's going to happen, I can't help but feel like he's going to be kicking himself in the ass later, but maybe he'll prove us all wrong. Do you think, Larry?
We shall see. I mean, they did not announce a return date, so but they're aiming for the end of February, and he'd already said he's going to be needing to restructure business wise. So we'll see. We'll see what comes out of it. I don't have a clue.
I mean, certainly a compelling, interesting story. I think about AWE in particular, who they've kind of had to get in bed with at this point. It started off as being a part of Roger Davis's thing. Roger Davis, Larry, who now at this point, thank the Lord, is no longer running wrestling shows. you know, and then they got in bed with OSWA. And that didn't work out, thank the Lord. And, you know, and now they're in bed with UIW and Stan. I mean, I still have not heard a single blessed thing about, you know, a lot of the same talent that AWE did very well with, apparently, on Sunday. I haven't heard a thing about how that Saturday show went at UIW, have you?
Well, since you asked, Mr. Platinum, they reported a nice attendance jump, 175. Now, again, if that's a real number, that's quite an improvement for UIW.
Hmm. I mean, and again, it's one thing that I've learned. Have I ever hedged a number? Oh, certainly I did in the early days. And then I realized, you know what, though? Things shake out in the wash. It's no use faking a number, because the long-term story is what matters. It's a marathon, not a sprint. So, I mean, do I believe that 175 people showed up in Temple? I guess it's conceivable. Certainly they used to draw similar numbers when Jeter was on top. So it's definitely possible. But you know what? That payroll that they paid, You know, and again, what long-term angles were established in those things? None. I mean, AWE did get two great matches, and that's kind of more their flavor. For UIW, I just go, what the hell did that do? You know, they got one tag match. And again, you know, AWE's in bed with those guys, but I have a feeling there's going to come a point where AWE is not going to need them or want to be in bed with them anymore. And it'll be interesting to see where things go from there, both for UIW and AWE.
Well, just another note on UIW, they're bringing in Robbie Yee to main event their show in February. And they are they have scrapped the women's tournament for February as far as it doing a one-night event. But they still plan to do a 16-woman tournament spread out over a number of shows and bring in
a lot
some
of
fairly well-known folks.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, more power to them. You know, it'll be interesting to see if – I think UIW is one of those groups that's – trying to find its legs again, and they're kind of and their answer is to double down, and sometimes doubling down works. I think for AWE, at least on an artistic level, doubling down worked. With UIW, I'm curious if it's going to be this thing where doubling down is going to work, or if doubling down just means you're going to, you know, you're going to be wearing a barrel and nothing else faster.
Yeah, well, and these names are not confirmed, but names that are under consideration: Crazy Mary Dobson, mm-hmm. Tessa Blanchard, Santana Garrett, Jesse Bell, Mickey Knuckles. So they've got some pretty big name women that are on the, you know, on the possibles list, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, what does that mean in Temple, Georgia? I don't know.
I don't know, but again, 2016, what a fascinating year it's going to be. I got to say, it will. I'll call it out like this. I think this year is going to be the most exciting year that Georgia wrestling has seen in a very long time. A lot of players, a lot of people looking to move up, a lot of people really establishing themselves, and a lot of people who are making a lot of promises that they have to live up to. I can't wait to see how it all shakes out, and we'll be there for every step of it, won't we?
We hope so.
Oh, and before we go, a programming note we want to touch on here. We are going to have a change starting next week. Tipping Point will be alternating weeks with a brand new show, Three the Hard Way, featuring Matt Hankins and Big Wood as the hosts. So their show will air a week from tonight, and then we will be back 2 weeks from tonight, and so on. So
yes,
please tune in next. Go ahead.
I think this is great, and this way, you know, Tipping Point won't feel like the same show again and again and again in any way, shape, or form. I think, you know, there'll always be a lot of great stuff to talk to, a lot of great – make sure we always have a great guest and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, Hankins, as much as I hate that bastard, and Big Wood, I think they can give a very different flavor and sort of talk about wrestling in some of the places that you and I don't necessarily touch on as often.
Right.
And
right.
I mean, I just think that that's a great rounding out of Tuesday night.
And then, of course, we have the Fans of Wrestling show. Those guys have been going great guns. And they had a live show last night talking about the weekend's events, and then they'll be back on Wednesday. So I believe they plan to continue two shows a week. So check those guys out as well. And, of course, Peach State Pandemonium every Thursday night. The granddaddy.
God, some of the guests that Peach State Pandemonium have been getting, you definitely want to check that out. I think that's, you know, that show often gets overlooked, but it absolutely should not. Not if you care about wrestling, and not if you really want to learn something on a different kind of level that only guys that have been doing it as long as those guys have can do.
Yes, and it's certainly not overlooked in terms of the number of listeners, because Peach State Pandemonium has for several years routinely had the by far the greatest number of listeners each week. So
man,
a lot of folks like what they're doing.
Guys.
And I think, if you listen to it, I mean, it's fun. It's fun to listen to that show. Well, Mr. Steve, we've passed our hour mark. I guess we'll get together again in 2 weeks from tonight.
Yes, we'll see you in 2 weeks, but definitely next Tuesday you want to check out Three the Hard Way. And until then, I'm Steve Platinum, and for Larry Goodman, we'll see you soon on The Tipping Point.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.